welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier, with you for an hour of romance. Later on, we hear a story on the Radio City Playhouse from 1948, but right now it's the series Romance, with show regulars Harry Bartell and Virginia Gregg starring in Such a Wonderful Team, a CBS broadcast from July 30th, 1955.
Now from Hollywood, Romance.
Remember the equilateral triangle? If all sides are equal, all angles are equal too. That's geometry. Now take the triangle with three equal sides, and you may be sure each side has an angle. That's not geometry, that's an eternal triangle.
So now we bring you transcribed Kathleen Height's charming story, Such a Wonderful Team.
There wasn't any doubt that the evening had been a success. Milt Cronin was signed, sealed, and delivered before he'd finished his second cocktail. And it was largely Karen's doing. Paul would be the first to admit it. Even after 5 years of close association, she was still full of surprises, even to him.
Well, I hate to leave. Believe me, I rarely say that after I've parted with a couple of $100,000.
No hurry, Milt. I can't believe you're anxious to get back to your hotel.
I'm not.
Milt, why don't you drive out the country with me? It's a lot more comfortable.
Oh,
out there.
No, thanks. I've got a breakfast date at 8 and then the plane to catch at 10. Any chance of renting space on your terrace for the night, Karen? That's the coolest spot I've found all week.
Here's your key.
What?
It's even cooler than mine. 3 floors up.
No. Wait a minute. What kind of miracle woman have you got here, Paul?
Oh, it's just part of the Kerr Company's service to important clients. Only this time, the company president has no idea what his executive assistant is up to.
Well, give me some credit. I know better than to advertise something I can't deliver. It's Mike Canna's apartment, Paul. He's in Europe, and I'm the keeper of the key.
Oh, then by all means, Milt, be Mike's guest and ours.
Are you sure it's all right?
If Karen says it is, it is.
I don't know. It's a little amazing to me. Oh, but all my luggage is at the hotel. And
all your luggage was at the hotel. The fourth time you admired my apartment this evening, I got the message.
You mean I moved in?
Your bed is turned down.
Oh, no.
Come along, I'll show you.
Does anyone ever beat this gal to the punch, Paul?
If they ever do, I'll fire her.
You coming, Paul?
I think I'll wait here if you don't mind. Well, good night, Milt, and thanks for the business. You won't be sorry.
I'm sure of that already. Oh, well, give my best to Peg, will you?
I will. She'll miss seeing you.
Now, next time for sure. Oh, Paul, you got a great gal in this, Karen. You make a wonderful team.
I know.
It had been a long day, longer because of the muggy heat that steamed up from the streets of Manhattan. Standing now on Karen's terrace, looking down at those same streets, Paul Kerr began to relax for the first time that day. And for almost the first time that day, he thought of Peg and the children, and Long Island seemed very far away.
And when he saw the basket of fruit by the bed, I thought he'd weep.
Ah, you called every shot perfectly all day. I don't know how you do it, but don't lose the touch.
I'm a genius.
You know, this is just the beginning with Milt, don't you? That $200,000 is bus fare for his company, but if he likes the ride...
He will. But there isn't a reason in the world why we can't give them better service than Nichols. And better service is going to show up in sales. And Milt understands volume increase better than anyone.
It's a big day for us, Karen.
It's one of the biggest. You were sensational with that research you threw at him. It was a wonderful job.
Somehow my research always sounds more effective when you supply the settings. I don't think you'd have signed the deal in our boardroom, for instance.
It's too impersonal and too hot. Well, actually, I doubt if it was any cooler here today. But the effect was cooler.
The effect was great.
Are you really driving out to Long Island tonight?
Mm-hmm. Want to come along?
No, heavens, no.
Oh, a weekend in the country isn't that bad, and we got a lot of room.
Oh, I know, and I'm grateful, but I'm not the country weekend type. I disintegrate instead of relaxing. Take me all next week to pull the pieces together.
Oh, well, and don't come. I'll need you next week. Only do something diverting between now and Monday, Karen. You've worked too hard and too long.
Well, I'll sleep till noon tomorrow. That's all the diversion I'll need. Give Peg my best.
I'll do that. You know, you turned out to be pretty great. I don't know what I'd do without you.
No, it's fun. It's great fun working with you. We make a wonderful team. Good night, boss.
Night, Karen.
The habit was 10 years old. Peg Kerr could not go to sleep until Paul came home. She wasn't a worrier or a window watcher. There was no anxiety in her waiting. She was simply there. To be kissed, to be talked to be whatever Paul needed her to be. It was always Paul for Peg. Paul alone, his home, his children. This was her life. This was what she wanted.
Hello, darling.
Hi, honey. You smell good.
That's the way I played it.
Well, you don't look as tired as I expected you to be.
Not too bad. Long day, but a good one.
Oh, that's good. Well, what'll it be? A drink? Soft, hard, in between?
What's in between?
Milk.
Okay, in between. I'm really not thirsty. I just like to unwind a little. Ah, you knew before I got here it was going to be an in-between drink, huh?
Mm-hmm. I suspected.
You make the cookies?
Marianne. And I wouldn't risk them if I were you.
Oh?
I'm afraid our daughter's a dreadful cook. Eager, but dreadful. I promised her you'd try one.
Well, I don't know. They look so good on the plate. I hate to spoil the arrangement. Well. Oh, by the way, Milt Cronin sent you his best.
Milt's in town?
Mm-hmm. He'd been here all week.
Well, Paul, why didn't you tell me?
It was just business, Peg. Ruth wasn't with him. Nothing social about it.
Oh, I know, but I always have Milt out for dinner at least once, whether Ruth's with him or not. Will he be here long?
Mm-mm. He's leaving in the morning.
Oh, that's a shame. And I bet you kept him cooped up in the boardroom all week, having meals sent in if you bothered with food at all.
Now, that is where you are wrong. Peg, yeah, that Karen gets more amazing every... Oh, she sends her best, too.
Oh, how is Karen? It's been months since I've seen her.
Fine, great. And as I said, more amazing every day. Now, you take this deal with Milt. As you say, I would probably have kept him cooped up in the boardroom or my office or his hotel, but not Karen. You know where we've held the meetings this week?
Apparently, I don't.
In Karen's apartment. Oh, it was inspired, really. It was cool there. We were relaxed, informal. We didn't wear ties, ever.
Oh, what a nice idea. Like having Milt in your home.
Only better. Oh, well, what I mean is that Karen saw to it that we worked just so long without a break of some kind. She'd sense an impasse coming 10 minutes off, and by the time it came, she'd have the right drink at hand or the right food. And first thing you know, there was no impasse at all.
She is amazing, isn't she? Well, then you must have had a successful meeting with Milt.
$200,000 worth.
Wow.
And that's just the beginning. Peg, if we can deliver on this first deal, and Karen's dead sure that we can, that means that next time around, Milt will throw more business our way and more until, well, who knows? The possibilities are endless. We'll have old Nichols mumbling to himself.
Old Nichols?
You know, Willis Nichols, the biggest public relations outfit there is.
Oh.
We've been nicking away at some of his biggest accounts. I'm sorry, darling. I don't know why I bring his stuff home to you.
Well, I'm interested, if that's reason enough.
You sure you are. You're interested, and you don't understand a thing about it, do you, sweetie?
I could. I'd like to, Paul.
There's no need for that. Besides, one woman in my business is enough.
I do feel sorry about Milt, though. I hope he'll understand that I just didn't know he was in town.
He'll understand. To tell you the truth, he probably preferred it just the way it was.
Well, Paul, what...
Oh, no offense, Peg. This was just business. There wasn't any room for small social talk, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Karen, she handled everything perfectly. Just perfectly. I'm going to bed.
Yes, you'd better. Marianne and Tom have big plans for you in the morning.
Not for me, they don't. I am sleeping till noon, and that's an order. Night, darling.
Marianne and Tom Kerr raced their star boat next morning without their father. The gardener went along to keep an eye on them. And the east wing of the house was kept as quiet as possible so Paul could sleep in undisturbed. Before she went shopping, Peg left orders that no calls should be sent to the wing, and none were. But promptly at 9:30, the private line at Paul's bedside rang sharply.
Wake up, boss. It's important.
I thought you were going to sleep till noon.
I couldn't, and you shouldn't have.
Why?
I'd have called you sooner, but I just finished making the arrangements. If you're coming with me, you'll have to pack and be at LaGuardia at 11.
Oh, wait a minute now. What are you talking about?
Do you know why Milt Cronin's leaving today? I'll tell you. He's due back in Chicago tonight for the opening of the dealers' convention.
So?
Everyone will be there. Kiefer and Johnson from the coast, Adelman from Canada, Gunther and Henshaw from Colorado, Stebbins and Easton from Texas. Are you beginning to read me?
We got holes in our heads if we don't show up out there. That research will mean more to the dealers than it does to Milt.
And Milt will be there to help us sell it. Sooner or later, he's got to get the money from them anyway. This is our first big in with the whole industry.
That's good, Karen. You know what we need. Stop by the office.
I'm calling from the office. And I've talked Milton to waiting an hour and flying out with us.
Well, we can work on the plane and then...
Gate 7 at LaGuardia. We'll meet you there. Hurry, Paul.
Yeah, as soon as I can. Bye.
Darling, I'm so sorry about the call. Paul, what is it? What are you doing?
Chicago, Peg. I need clothes for a week at least. Help me, huh?
Well, sure, but...
I'll tell you all about it in the car, honey. It was Karen on the phone. She's got a big plan for us to do business out there. Do you ever know anyone who works so hard?
No. No, I don't think I ever did.
Their Chicago success was tremendous, to be matched only by later successes in Houston and San Francisco. Paul and Karen were an electric combination, a devastating 1-2 punch. It was the talk of the industry how well they complemented each other. Paul, the expert in statistical research, Karen, his imaginative interpreter. The magazine article told the story in its title, Such a Wonderful Team.
This is the first real chance I've had to read it. How many copies did you buy, Peg?
I didn't have a chance to buy any. Karen sent some advance copies.
Well, good for her.
And as soon as the magazine hit the stands, my friends started dropping in with copies to be sure I'd read it.
You like it?
I think it tells part of a story very well.
Part? Oh, honey, this writer practically lived with Karen and me for a month. He didn't leave anything out.
He wouldn't know this part of the story. No one could tell it to him except me, and I wouldn't.
Well, you mean about us, the kids, our home? Well, it isn't that kind of an article, Peg.
No, it isn't. And don't misunderstand me. I wouldn't want that kind of an article.
I guess I am misunderstanding you, then.
I want to talk, Paul.
You're upset about the article?
Not about the article. And I'm not just upset. I'm deeply concerned. The article crystallized a few things in my mind, that's all.
I don't want you concerned, Peg. Ever.
I believe that. That's why I think we should talk. Look at things together. See what we think. I'm terribly proud of you, Paul.
I want you to be.
And I'm terribly in love with you.
Peg, honey.
That's the kind of woman I am. The kind who's married to the man she wants, who loves him, has his children, runs his home.
And does it all so well.
Because she wants to. It's not unselfish. I suppose it's quite selfish, really, because it fulfills me. It makes me happy. I need to be loved, Paul.
You know I love you.
Yes, I think I do know that. I need to be married, too.
Well, aren't you?
This isn't much of a marriage anymore, Paul.
Peg!
Don't just react, darling. Think about it. Look at it closely. Because I have. I've done nothing else for the last 6 or 8 months.
Well, I've been away a lot, I know, but I've had to be, Peg. The business is like that. It takes time and thought and planning and more time.
And more, and pretty soon it takes all the time.
No, Peg, you don't understand.
I don't. I really don't. Can you make me understand, Paul? I don't think you realize what's happened already. How much of your life you've transplanted. How much of our marriage you've replaced.
Are you talking about Karen?
I guess I am. I can't talk to you about you without talking about Karen.
Peg, I don't know what you think, but if you have any idea there's anything between Karen and me besides the business, you're wrong.
I always said I'd know if you were being unfaithful to me. I think I would know. No, Paul. I'm not talking about that kind of infidelity.
Are there kinds?
I'm being replaced, or perhaps relieved is a better word. When she began doing your entertaining for you, I began to lose some ground
Peg,
that was all mine before.
Peg, it's just that it was easier and, truthfully, more effective for us and a lot less trouble for you.
Yes, that's what I told myself at first. But it's grown, Paul, so gradually, so effortlessly, and I believe this so unintentionally. Until now, I have to ask you, what is our marriage for? What need does it fill for you?
Well, it... You know all that, honey. You and I, well... I don't have any quick answers.
Oh, darling, I don't want a quick answer. I want what I said before, for us to look at it, think about it. I don't want to demand or accuse. I don't want to end up hating Karen and you. I just...
I don't know. I guess I thought we were immune to this sort of thing. I don't know what I thought.
Paul, just look at it as thoughtfully as you can. Take time with it. I have. I don't like my alternatives.
Do you know what they are?
What they seem to be, anyway. My friends have met the problem in different ways. Lisa Chapman's an alcoholic. Ann Warner's taken up younger men. Nora Church travels.
Now, Peg.
Will you think about it, Paul? Look at it all carefully.
There wasn't any hysteria in what Peg had said. There were no threats. There was simply her deep concern. Paul knew that. And he thought about it, as Peg suggested. But he couldn't just think about it, and he couldn't do it alone. There was Karen. She was important to him, too. He had to know how important.
My boss, what a question.
I want to know, Karen. Are you in love with me?
Well, I'd have to think about it. Are you sure you want me to think about it?
Very sure.
You want a drink?
No.
Well, I said it once. It's fun. It's great fun working with you. It's exciting to be so closely attuned to someone. We think alike, and yet we don't.
I wonder, are we always working?
Well, you know we are. I don't have to tell you that. Nothing's happened. Why, nothing's even come close to happening.
But it could. Couldn't it, Karen? I mean, if we keep on seeing as much of each other as we do.
I suppose it could. I suppose there's enough between us now, and hours shared, and interest, and attraction. I suppose it could happen.
But it hasn't. I think I love you.
Paul.
Now, in a way, it must be a kind of love. Great appreciation. Great warmth. We are very close, Karen.
But not in love.
No. Not in love.
I don't think I've ever thought of you that way. Yet, I'm with you more than I've ever been with anyone. And it's entirely painless. I love being with you.
I don't ever remember being tired of you. There's something about this combination of you and me is exhilarating enough and stimulating enough. The time together has passed too easily, Karen.
You know, Peg was right. You should look at it closely. So should I. And I am. For the very first time.
All the time away from her and the children, I haven't missed them. Not really missed them. But if they weren't there, if there was no Peg, no kids, there'd be less of me, Karen. Much, much less. And I wouldn't like that.
Funny, I was just thinking about me. Time with you, well, wasted is the very worst word for it. But even without meaning to, you've come close to filling a void. I've let you take time that wasn't yours.
It's not good. It's not right. I don't know why I couldn't see it before.
You never really looked, Paul, any more than I did. What are you going to do?
Try like the devil to find the right answer.
Research is your end of the business, boss. When you've found the answer, I'll take it from there.
The first answer was easiest and most obvious. Paul and Peg and the children went abroad for 3 months. No business, no interruptions, no Karen. And they were good months. They were full of family pleasures and rediscoveries. But Paul knew that it wasn't the complete answer. That was still to be searched out back home.
Romance is produced and directed by Norman McDonald with editorial supervision by Het Mannheim. You have heard Such a Wonderful Team, specially written for Romance by Kathleen Height.
Romance on Tuned to Yesterday from July 30th, 1955 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of Romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now on to the Radio City Playhouse with a program called Temporarily Purple, written by Ernest Canoy, and starring Lamont Johnson and Anne Petoniak, who would seemingly have a more successful career later in her life. On radio during its golden era, she appeared in broadcasts of this program, The Marriage, The Chase, X-1, and broke out in the first couple of seasons of the 1970s CBS Radio Mystery Theater. In the 1980s, on the Broadway stage, she was nominated twice for a Tony Award. Hear Anne Petoniak now in one of her earlier radio appearances from NBC on November 29, 1948.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 17. Your director and host on Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Bob Warren. Ladies and gentlemen, all week long, letters have been pouring in congratulating us on last week's broadcast and thanking John Larkin for his magnificent performance as Lloyd Bruckner. It's impossible for me to tell you how much these letters mean to us, but on behalf of John Larkin, on behalf of the rest of the Playhouse staff, on behalf of Dick McDonough, our supervisor, on behalf of Monroe Lawrence, our brilliant young engineer, and Jerry McGee, our invaluable sound man, a very sincere thanks for writing. Tonight, we change our pace and offer you a comedy. The script was written by Ernest Canoy and is this outstanding young author's fourth contribution to the series. It is called Temporarily Purple, and stars Anne Petoniak and Lamont Johnson. Here is Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 17, Temporarily Purple, by Ernest Canoy. High above Midtown New York, the center building towers into the air. On the 48th floor, high above the street, are the offices of the Porpoise Press, Herb Barrett, president. The nap on the carpet is ankle deep. The chromium furniture sits around the office like small metallic spider webs. And a deep dream of peace pervades the reception room. But in the inner offices...
No, I say absolutely no. My resignation will be in as soon as I fill my fountain pen.
At the risk of a double negative, no, not never.
No.
Gentlemen, there's no use losing our tempers.
But after all, Mr. Barrett, Porpoise Press has a reputation to uphold.
I know reputation, but not much else, gentlemen. For a month, I've looked at enough red ink to fill every thermometer between here and Seattle. This company is not only short of funds, bankrupt, deficient in credit, but also flat broke on its face. We haven't made a profit since we pirated an edition of McKinley's memoirs.
But we have published the most important books in American literary history.
Yeah.
Clifton Fadiman said so himself.
York University awarded us this year's scroll for the best volume of post-expressionist, non-objective, neo-paleolithic poetry.
Unfortunately, Mr. Perks, we can't list scrolls under cash assets. Now, the trouble with Porpoise Press is that it just isn't printing what the public wants to read. Just look at our spring list.
Well.
Through the Upper Zambezi River with Gun and Camera.
Why, that was excellent.
Yes. A revised list of Colonel George Custer's executive officers in the campaign of 1860.
And 69.
The life and mating cycle of the Australian duck-billed platypus.
Brilliant work, that. Charming photographs.
Yes, weren't they?
Oh, but don't you see, nobody wants to read it, gentlemen. What we need are adventure stories, blood and thunder, cloak and dagger, dollars and cents. The public wants historical novels with romance, beautiful women with plunging necklines, swashbuckling swordsmen, murder, intrigue.
But that is trash.
Yes, well, we better start publishing some of the finance companies going to be around to repossess the rugs. We've got to publish a bestseller in the next month or we'll all be on unemployment insurance.
But we haven't had a popular novel on our list since Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Well, then we'll have to make a bestseller. Gentlemen, where's that manuscript that came in last week?
This one?
Yeah.
Social Customs and Traditions of the French Court under Louis Philippe.
A scholarly work. Excellent reading.
Exactly.
Wasn't it excellent?
Now, listen, gentlemen, in this manuscript, we've got every detail on one of history's wildest periods. Now, we're going to take this, and we're going to make it into the roughest, raciest, wildest novel to hit the bookstand.
What?
What's that?
But the author... After all, you can't...
Don't you worry about the author. We've got him signed up to one of our regular contracts. He has to accept all editing. The author can't kick. Got his name right here on the dotted line. See his signature? It's Michael Farrell, York University, Billers Creek, New York.
But the writing, who's going to...
I am, gentlemen. Get me three stenographers and I'll have it done in a week. Temporarily Purple.
What's that?
That's the title. That's all I've got so far, but it'll sell 1 million copies. With the right picture on the cover, 5 million. Now bring on those stenographers.
Ready, Miss Barrett?
Okay. Chapter 1. In a small hut on the outskirts of Versailles, where the sweep of a dying French feudalism splashed vivid colors against the ruins of a recent revolution, there lived a girl whose dark purple beauty flashed amid the green. Francois, she said, panting with emotion. Louis suspects. Purple, he said, brushing her scruples aside, his dark brows flashing.
I love you.
Their lips met in a passionate kiss. She felt her soul melt within her. Deep purple flashes swam before her eyes and her senses reeled. Row of asterisks. Suddenly the door burst open and Louis stood, rapier in hand. Turn, sir, or you die. Swords rang in the flickering... Make that swords clashed in the flickering candlelight. And, somebody give me some black coffee, will you? Where was I? The ring of steel filled the Parisian night. Purple's ruffles were stained with a slow, creeping crimson. And no sugar in that coffee, fellas. Then, sweeping down the grand staircase, Purple smiled at the populace and waved her hand. "Come, my dear," said Louis. "The people await their queen."
It's finished. 6 days, 3 hours, a masterpiece. Temporarily Purple by Michael Farrell.
Somebody get me a bed, huh?
This is absolutely the most fantastic thing.
All right, gentlemen. Order, please, gentlemen. Yes, I've got the sales reports in for Temporarily Purple.
Wonderful.
Take a listen. New York, 500,000. Hear that? Chicago, 400,000. Los Angeles, 350,000. Boston, one.
One?
Yeah, the Vice Squad bought a copy. They're having it banned. We're all set.
I still don't feel right about it.
Oh, relax, will you? Hollywood offered $500,000 for it.
But the author...
That's right, the author, Michael Farrell. He doesn't know it, but he's written the biggest thing in publishing since Uncle Tom's Cabin. When he gets a load of his royalty check, Michael Farrell's going to be plenty glad his manuscript went to the Porpoise Press.
Where is he?
Hey.
Where is he? I just want to get my hands on him.
Hey, here now, wait.
I'll scalp him, so help me. I'll eviscerate him.
I beg your pardon, young lady. We're having a conference here.
This is the Porpoise Press.
Yeah.
I'm looking for Mr. Herbert Barrett.
I'm Mr. Barrett.
You're sure you're Barrett?
Certainly.
Well, that's just fine.
Hey, what?
I'm Michael Farrell.
Oh, well, this check is... Huh? But you're a girl. You can't...
I can, and I am. And here's your check in fine, delicate, infinitesimal pieces. How dare you? How dare you? I turned in a careful piece of research on Louis Philippe, and you turn it into a cheap, trashy, If I hadn't signed that contract, I'd sue you for everything right down to your garter.
Miss Farrell, can't we talk this over? Perhaps a drink?
The only drink I'd have in your presence, Mr. Barrett, would be at a wake with you as guest of honor.
After all, I only changed it a little.
A little? A little? Why, the only thing left of mine was the date of Louis Philippe's birth. And you even changed that from Sunday to Wednesday.
Well...
Oh, I'd horsewhip you, but Father sold the buggy.
After all, Miss Farrell, it was only
a
slight...
Don't you give me any more of your slick alibis. There's only one more thing before I go.
Yes?
Just this.
Gentlemen, the author.
Remarkable left jab. Remarkable.
Yes, wasn't it?
Gentlemen, we're in a jam. You know, she can't sue us, but if the papers find out that we faked that book, there's going to be plenty of trouble.
And besides, she destroyed a Porpoise Press check. Why, we've been insulted.
You're right. Porpoise honor is compromised.
We've been definitely sullied.
Not to mention the assault on the president.
Indeed, yes.
Oh, if she ever spills that story to the press, Clifton Fadiman's going to laugh us clean out of the Algonquin bar.
And Simon will whisper to Schuster.
We'll be drummed out of the Book of the Month Club.
Horrors.
Gentlemen, we've got to get busy. Where's that address? Here it is. Michael Farrell, York University, Billers Creek, New York. Gentlemen, pack your bags. The Porpoise Press is on the march. I beg your pardon, sir. Can you tell me where I...
For heaven's sake, young man. This is the library of the York University.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was told I could find a Miss Michael Farrell doing some research here.
There has to be perfect quiet, you know.
I wonder if
you... everybody shouted, there'd never be any work done.
I know, but
Miss Michael... hush, you know.
I'm looking for Miss
Michael... Why, if everybody talked, there'd be chaos. Just chaos.
Chaos, yeah. Look, could you tell
That's
me where...
That's why
I...
we insist upon complete silence.
Look, I want Miss Michael Farrell.
That's certainly nothing to shout about. She's right over there by the catalog.
Thanks.
Remember now, there's absolutely no reason for any commotion. Shh.
Miss Farrell?
Yes. Oh, it's you. What do you mean by following me?
Shh, not so loud. This is a library of deathly hush, you know.
Haven't you done enough? What's the idea of coming up here? I've got an academic reputation to uphold. Why, I ought to slap you right up...
Not again. I had enough of that yesterday. Hey, look, has anybody ever told you pack a mighty wallop for an antiquarian? Like Samson, you know.
I hope it broke your jawbone.
Oh, sure. Samson and the jawbone of an
high.
Exactly.
Miss Farrell, a little quiet, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Strange women call me up to accuse me of contributing to juvenile delinquency. Every day somebody asks if Purple was autobiographical.
Yeah, well.
And a man rode on a bicycle all the way from Nahoma Falls, Michigan, to propose marriage to me. He's got me confused with Purple. And those newspaper reporters, they keep bothering me to pose in tight dresses on Windy Hill.
Oh, but you haven't talked to him yet. You haven't told him, I mean.
No, I
haven't. Good. Come on, let's go, huh?
Go? What are you talking about? Go where?
I'm taking you to dinner.
What? Well, that's the last straw, you egotistical, self-centered...
Miss Farrell, I have warned you twice. We simply cannot have noise in the library. I would not stand for it.
I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Wilson.
No excuses. I have taken all that mortal man possibly can stand. Now, you will have to leave.
But this man...
I insist upon perfect silence in the library. Besides, you've got me positively feverish with all this arguing. Come on, I'll see you out. And I don't ever want to see you skulking in the library again. Don't let me catch you even sneaking around the magazine rack.
But I...
Miss Farrell, so far as the library is concerned, you have a vicious, communicable, tropical plague.
Oh.
Goodbye.
Oh, now, for heaven's sake, don't start crying.
Now I won't be able to finish all those lovely Middle English manuscripts with the only complete cross index outside of the British Museum.
Oh, Carl, I'm sorry.
And it's all your fault. You with your cheap novel and that horrid heroine.
Oh, she...
What a stupid name for a character. Purple.
What's wrong? At least it's got color. Anyway, I kind of like Purple. Here, take my handkerchief.
Thank you.
You know, that red hair, she even reminds me of you.
Oh!
Oh, look, Miss Farrell. Michael? Mike?
Mickey!
Mickey. Hey, I'm really sorry about this, but it isn't as bad as all that. The Porpoise Press has a lot of influence with libraries. I'll get that straightened out for you if I have to endow a whole wing of Etruscan poetry.
Do you think you can?
Endow a wing? No. As a matter of fact, all my money's tied up in temporarily purple, and the sales receipts haven't come in yet. I owe everybody. Even my analyst. If I miss one more payment, he'll have the finance company repossess my psyche.
Oh, you're silly. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I know, but it stops you from crying. Hey, look, what do you say we go riding somewhere?
I should say not.
Got my car down the block. Maybe with the wind blowing in your face, we can talk this whole thing over sensibly?
I think you're forgetting, Mr. Barrett, that I despise you and everything connected with you.
I know, but tell me about it in the car.
I will not. I wouldn't go riding in your car for all the money in the world.
Honestly, Mickey, I feel like a heel about the whole thing.
You do?
I mean, the trouble about the book and you're being thrown out of the library and all.
Well, I guess you were just trying to do your job. But it really is so exasperating.
You know, you're very pretty when you're mad.
Well, are you trying to say that you deliberately annoy me just for that, on aesthetic grounds?
No, not exactly. It's just that blasted coincidence.
Something new?
No, I mean my making up the most fascinating, dangerous, irresistible woman I could think of, Purple, and then you turn out to look just like her, red hair and all.
Ugh.
What's wrong?
Red and purple, they clash.
Yeah, but you do look like her.
Oh, I do not.
Well, you do have a loose turtleneck sweater on, but outside of that, the image is spitting.
You have a charming way of putting things, but I'm not in the least amused.
Yeah, I know. Don't mind it. It's just intellectual patter. I learned it as a child, teething on a bar stool at the store.
Oh, you're crazy.
It's neurotic. You know, I think the Porpoise Press Board of Directors is going to stay in Billers Creek a long time.
For heaven's sakes, why?
Well, I can take you out to dinner every night.
Every night?
Oh, don't worry. I'll put it down on the expense account.
But, Mr. Barrett,
You can't spend all week at Billish Creek and just come down to New York on weekends.
Mr. Fuddy and I are at a loss. We've never published anything like Temporarily Purple before.
No one ever has.
Now, take it easy, correct. Boys. Everything's all right. It'll be about one more week. You just keep busy on your publicity campaigns and the...
Yes. I've had a wonderful idea. Why not have Miss Farrell marry five orchestra leaders in rapid succession? It's the very latest thing for lady authors.
They invariably make the first page after the second divorce.
No, that'll take too long. I'm working on a much bigger project.
I hope there's no risk involved. Sometimes I wish we were back publishing McKinley's memoirs.
So do I, Fuddy.
Don't worry, Fuddy. You know perfectly well that everything I do is bound to be absolutely safe.
I hate to bring it up, but don't you think driving with one hand is just a little dangerous?
Guess so. Yeah, there's only one answer.
Let go of me?
Oh. Stop driving. It's been fast, hasn't it, Mickey?
It certainly has.
That's what I don't like about it, about us.
What do you mean?
Patterns. Just like a Saturday Evening Post story. We meet cute. That's the first step. We fight. Second step. We make up. Third, we fall in love.
Herb!
Fourth, and we get married at the end.
But Herb! Is that by some stretch of the imagination a proposal?
I guess you could call it that.
You certainly do put things oddly. Well, I suppose it would be a shame to spoil your storyline, so I think...
Is that by the same stretch of the imagination an acceptance?
A two-way stretch.
Oh, no. I withdraw my proposal.
All right. I won't do it again, really. Now, there's only one question. When?
Well, let's see. It can't be this week. I'm all jammed up with literary cocktail parties.
Temporary Purple?
That's right. It can't be the Sunday after I'm on The Author Meets the Critic. It's going to be a tough broadcast. We're at a disadvantage. They'll have read the book. Monday, I'm on with Mary Margaret McBride. Tuesday, you're going to be on Tex and Jinx.
Me? Oh, no, I'm not.
What's the matter? What have you got against Tex and Jinx?
Nothing. For all I know, they're a fine couple, but I'm not going on the radio with them. And that's final. I'm not going on the radio for anyone.
What are you getting so excited about, honey? It's only publicity.
That's it. Herb Barrett, I will not live my married life inside a fishbowl.
Mm.
Now, if there's to be any of your wild press agent stunts, you can call the whole thing off right now. And I'll tell the newspapers all about Temporary Purple.
Oh, Mickey, you wouldn't.
I would so. I'm pig-headed.
Well... Look, I'm sure we can iron it all out. You don't have to worry about a thing.
No publicity?
No publicity. No.
You promise?
I promise.
To the future, Mrs. Barrett.
In sickness and in health.
Till death do us part.
Why, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. And I'm sure the four of us will be very happy together.
And will you be taking a honeymoon, Miss Farrell?
Yes, but we're not sure where, are we, Herb?
No, not yet.
But Herb and I have a great many plans.
Ah, yes, Mr. Barrett's plans. He was telling me about them this morning.
No, Perch, not
He's
those.
He's got the whole publicity campaign
not,
worked out,
no,
you
Perch,
know.
Not now,
publicity
please.
Plans?
Well, yes.
Do go on, Mr. Perch.
Pay no attention to them, honey. This promotion for Purpose Press, that's all. It means absolutely nothing.
Well, I'm not so sure.
No.
Go on, Mr. Perks. You interest me strangely.
Here we go again.
Well, the plans are remarkable. They will make you the sensation of the literary world.
Oh, I see. Anything else?
Mr. Barrett wants a picture of you in a Wedgwood sarong on the back cover of every copy.
Wedgwood?
In historical period, you know.
We'll have hats named after you.
The Mickey Farrell cloche. The only hat that tells time.
No.
Cocktails named after you.
The Mickey Farrell fin.
Go on.
We arranged to have you voted by the Columbia senior class as the girl I like most to stand next to on the Van Cortlandt Express train.
Oh, yes. How utterly charming.
Oh, why, it'll be the greatest personal publicity campaign since Barnum built up Jenny Lind.
And it's all Mr. Barrett's idea.
Yes, it is.
It's all Mr. Barrett's idea.
Down to the last exciting photograph.
Oh, they weren't so exciting.
Herb Barrett, I... Oh!
Something wrong?
You promised. You promised we'd have privacy, that we'd live a normal married life. And then behind my back, with the wool pulled over my eyes, you stab a knife in my heart.
Your metaphor is showing, honey.
Now, don't you try to get me to laugh, because I won't do it. Herb Barrett, you are an unprincipled, unmitigated, unethical monster. And I'm through with you, you intellectual amoeba.
How the devil did amoebas get into this? For heaven's sake, Mickey, I'm a man and you're a woman.
Exactly. We have nothing in common.
Look, Mickey, you don't realize that even the best things today have to be publicized and promoted. Authors like Hemingway, Thomas Mann, Huxley, T.S. Eliot. Why, without publicity, no one would read them at all.
That's right, Miss Farrell. Why, we even had to publicize McKinley's memoirs.
I still don't see why my...
even the great masters of the past are read more often than ever before because of modern promotion methods, honey. Even Shakespeare, if he were alive today without publicity, he'd end up writing toothpaste ads. Mozart would be composing soap jingles.
Positively.
You see, Mickey. Well, honey, is it on again?
Well, all right, I guess so. But honestly, Herb, sometimes...
Hold that, will you, Mr. Barrett?
What?
Hold that pose. Steady. Thank you. Say, when is the wedding?
Don't you read your own paper? Come on, Mickey. It's tomorrow morning, and it's going to be the biggest wedding in publishing history.
Congratulations.
Why, what's the matter, Mr. Perks?
He always cries at weddings.
Have you got the train tickets for me, Freddie?
Oh, yes, they're all here.
Look this way, Mr. Barrett. Television cameras. Take your sister now. That's right.
That's all, boys. We'll have to go. We're going to miss our train.
Come on,
Mickey. We're going to miss our train, fellas. Glad that's over. I was never so glad to see a train in all my life. I'm just going to set the bags down. Porter can put them away when he makes up the berth.
When do we leave?
About 10 minutes.
Oh, it was a lovely wedding, darling. But couldn't it have been, more private?
Look, honey, that wedding's going to sell 100,000 copies of Purple.
That's all I wanted to know.
See, it is good to be alone. You know, honey, I don't know quite what to say now.
Oh. You never really told me that you love me.
I didn't? Well, I guess it's a little late now.
Oh, no, Herb, please tell me, won't you? Please.
How about that poem? How do I love thee? Let me count the ways.
Oh, that's lovely, Herb.
I love thee to the breadth and height my soul can reach. Say, do you hear something humming?
Humming? Oh, no. Must be the air conditioning. Go on, Herb, that's beautiful.
I mean it, too, Mickey, every word of it.
Kiss me, darling, wildly, passionately, like Purple.
Oh, sure, honey. I'll kiss you the way no woman was ever kissed before. Come here.
Oh, Herb. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Mickey, that humming comes from the next drawing room.
No, Herb, no. I'm sure
there's
that
there's a hole in that door.
I'll be... Oh, all right, Mr. Barrett, we're finished with the motion pictures. Ready for the still?
Movie camera, what's all this? What the devil's going on? Who are these people?
We're all from Life magazine, Mr. Barrett.
Life magazine?
Shall we set up the lights?
That's right, dear. You were so convincing about publicity that I arranged to have Life go on a honeymoon.
You arranged?
Yes, dear. They've got everything down on film.
Oh, you mean you led me on? You trapped me with sonnets and part the great love... Oh, Lord.
Smile, Mr. Barrett. A little wider.
Outside, all of you. Beat it. Blow, will you?
Oh, but our contract, Mrs. Barrett.
You can go on her half of the honeymoon, not mine. Now, outside.
Mr. Luce won't like this.
Oh, Mickey, how could you? Dragging our honeymoon in the dust with all those profaning. Haven't you got any respect for our marriage? Planting a sound camera, reporters. It's infamous. It's
publicity.
Oh, no, I still think you... guess you taught me a lesson, huh? Yeah, I guess you can't have too much publicity. Oh, Mickey, will you forgive me, honey?
Oh, of course, darling. And you were a good sport about it.
Me?
I wouldn't think of really having Life along for our honeymoon.
If I were sure of that, I'd kiss you right now.
Oh, you don't have to worry. No more publicity on this honeymoon. No one will interrupt us now.
Well, then come here. Well, what do you want?
Where shall I set up the camera for the pictures of Mr. Barrett in his pajamas? They're all set for life's cover in full color.
Oh, no. No. No!
You have just heard Temporarily Purple by Ernest Canoy, attraction 17 on Radio City Playhouse. Lamont Johnson was Herb Barrett, Ann Petoniak, Mickey Farrell. Other members of the cast included Bill Keen, Cameron Andrews, and Arthur Cole. The entire production was under the direction of Harry W. Junkin. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shields. Radio City Playhouse is supervised for the National Broadcasting Company by Richard P. McDonough. This is Harry Junkin again. Next week, a gripping and dramatic story of the strange friendship that occurred between a writer and a young man found guilty of murder. The script is Five Extra Nooses by Charles Lee Hutchings. We think you'll enjoy it, and we hope you'll be with us. Good night, everybody.
The Radio City Playhouse on 2 and 2 yesterday from November 29th, 1948 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of romance on 2 and 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.